Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. At this time, I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you very much, Stephanie, and I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect workshop, Managing Eye and Vision Changes Related to Cancer Treatments. Now, this is a very important topic, and it's one that is rarely addressed, actually, in all of our programs, and it's one that we are hoping to do much more often because it really does impact all of you on this call today. And today's program is a collaborative effort between Cancer Care and many other cancer organizations. And it really is because of that collaboration and your interest in this subject that we have over 550 participants on the call today. And you come from all over the United States, and we also have international participants from Canada, Korea, the Netherlands, and United Kingdom. So you really come from all over the world, and it really is a credit to each of you that you have chosen to spend the next hour with us on this call. Now, today's program was made possible by a grant from the Alan Roos Memorial Trust, and I really want to thank them for supporting this program and calling attention to these issues. It's really very important that we have this opportunity to address these issues today. Now, I'd like to turn your attention to all the materials that you received from Cancer Care. In those materials is information about all of our collaborating organizations as a free resource for all of you to access information from. And there also is information about our speakers and the topics that they'll be addressing. And there also is an evaluation form, and I'm going to ask you all to complete that evaluation form. When you think about it, who but each of you can best tell us the topics that we should be offering? Topics like this topic or other topics that are really important to you but really don't ever get fully addressed in programs that you go to or when you're seeing your physician or healthcare team. So please do tell us what you'd like us to do. This is the beginning of a new year, the beginning of 2015. We are planning lots of programs for the year, and of course your recommendations could not be more timely for us at this time. Now, we have wonderful speakers on our program today, and I want to begin by introducing our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Stuart Fleischman. Dr. Fleischman is Founding Director, Cancer Supportive Services, Continuum Cancer Centers of New York, and also Accreditation Surveyor, American College of Surgeons Commission on Cancer. And Dr. Fleischman is going to present an overview of eye and vision changes related to cancer treatments, causes and risk factors, and discussion of common eye and vision changes. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to Dr. Fleischman.
Thank you, Dr. Messner, and again, thank everybody for tuning into this teleconference. It is a very important topic and a rather underestimated topic, as Dr. Messner alluded to. Many patients will describe to us about the problems they're having with their eyes, often at the end of treatment when all the busyness of treatment sort of tails off, but we do know if we would ask that patients are bothered by some eye symptoms all the way through treatment. Not every patient in the same way. Different cancers, different treatments affect people in a number of ways. Those of us who have a strong primary care medicine background often try what we would think of doing first for a physically healthy patient, but that's not always the right thing, and it is good to have a very trusted ophthalmologist who knows about cancer close by to do consults and for referrals. It's very, very helpful. So patients tell us a variety of different things, and many of them refer to either excess tearing, kind of like when people have allergies, they'll often try over-the-counter medicines or over-the-counter drops without even telling us, maybe sometimes effective, sometimes not. Generally, we hear about it when they're not effective. Dry eyes are a problem that people also discuss, especially women and men who are on hormonal treatments for breast cancer or prostate cancer often tell us of a variety of changes to the skin and to the hair, and dry eyes tend to fall in those situations as well. Patients who are on pain medication or antiemetic medication, anti-nausea medicine, which is the bulk of our patients these days getting treated for cancer, also describe very dry eyes, dry skin, dry scalp, And again, we're hard-pressed to know what to do beyond our regular basic primary care suggestions, so we rely on our colleagues to make that a better treatment. Tearing is sometimes a problem when patients are on a particular taxane, a group of chemotherapies that are often used in a variety of cancers, breast cancer, ovarian cancer, lung cancer, and that can also be, I believe, something related to the tear ducts, and we'll hear more about that later. Blurred vision is something that patients always describe, especially on the variety of medicines that we give. It can be them, but some of us worry that it may be some other eye problem that needs to be addressed by a trusted ophthalmology colleague. They would do a proper eye exam and know which products are best to use, which don't interfere with the side effects of chemotherapy or actually complement the side effects of chemotherapy or radiation therapy if that's what a patient is getting. Many patients use steroids during treatment, either as chemotherapy itself and some types of lymphoma or leukemia. They could use steroids as an anti-nausea medicine or even part of the chemotherapy regimen in some, for some types of myeloma. Steroids, we were concerned about the connection between steroids and either developing a cataract or accelerating a cataract that's starting to develop. I think our colleagues will speak more about that too, but that's a question we are concerned about. Sometimes it's a sigh of relief when a patient has already had cataract surgery because we know that the steroids won't affect their eyes in that way. Since patients during chemotherapy and radiation therapy have less resistance to infection, we're concerned about patients who develop infections. That can happen anywhere. Eye infections generally don't get people to emergency rooms or get them admitted, but sometimes they can be so bad because no one has mentioned it and it's neglected in the busyness of treatment. So infections, like infections in other parts of the body, concern us as well. So these are the kinds of things I've heard about during my time with patients. I may have left some out, but I think that those are sort of the major topics that we all need to know a lot more about when they happen, as well as how to manage them from the specialist to know better. Thank you.
Oh, thank you very much. And I can't thank you enough, Dr. Fleischman, for really setting the stage for this program today. And I would now like to introduce our next speaker, Dr. Stella Kim, Joe M. Green, Junior Professor of Ophthalmology, Department of Ophthalmology and Visual Science, University of Texas Health, Physic Eye Clinic, Memorial Hermann Medical Plaza. And Dr. Kim is going to address tips to manage dry or watery eyes, loss of eyelashes and eye infections, recognizing changes in vision and field of vision, floaters and flashing lights, what to do, and how eye product can help you cope with eye and vision changes. All of these are very critically important issues, it's my pleasure now to bring Dr. Kim on board.
Thank you very much. I've been charged with covering a variety of symptoms that you as patients may experience. And as was mentioned by Dr. Fleischman, patients experiencing dry eyes during treatment is very common. And though the bottom line problem may be dry eyes, this may manifest in patients as watery eyes or runny eyes, blurred vision towards the end of the day. All of these symptoms can actually point to the same problem, and that is your gland not working to produce the tears that you need to see well. So dryness can be mitigated by over-the-counter eye medications that you can buy, and it is always better to use preservative-free artificial tears. Now, there are so many makers that make this, and it doesn't matter what product you buy. It's that you buy the preservative-free types of artificial tears that's on the market, and also some ointment at nighttime by the same brand. And just as you would hydrate your skin, you can hydrate your eyes, and it'll instantly make your eyes feel better and probably improve your vision. Obviously, eye infection in our patient population is very, very common in concept, but actually infection in general may be common, but because antibiotics are given during heavy-duty chemotherapy, we don't see it as often, where we have to give topical antibiotic drops. But if patients experience redness or irritation, which may actually be dryness, but experience more discharge and blurred vision, infections can not only be from bacteria, but it can also be reactivation of viruses that live in our body. So it is a very important finding to alert your oncologist that this is the symptom that you're experiencing. One of the most common reactivation of viral infection that's very common in all of us is herpetic virus, the same virus that causes fever blisters. So that can cause relatively manageable infection to very devastatingly serious infection if it involves the back of the eye. It's not very common to experience a field of a vision loss. However, some people may feel that their vision kind of goes in and out as their blood is very low from chemotherapy. It is very important to alert, again, these symptoms to your oncologist. But if patients have any metastatic disease, metastatic cancer, even if you know you don't have any in your brain, if you feel that your vision is involved in terms of having a visual field cut, that is something that should be evaluated immediately. Flashes and floaters. Floaters are very common. Floaters just are representing the gel that's in our cavity of our eyes as it detergesses and becomes into literally like little floaters that come in and out of your view. But certainly floaters can also reflect either hemorrhage or more devastatingly infection. Floaters should not be sort of dismissed easily. And certainly flashing lights can be symptoms of patients having retinal problems, whether it's retinal detachment. But more importantly, some of the drugs that are given to patients can also cause flashing lights, such as the newer antibody drugs, such as cretinizumab, and patients who may have cancer-related eye problems where patients make their own antibodies against their own eyes can also have these flashing lights that's not related to retinal detachment. So basically what to do, what can you do when you're experiencing some of these symptoms? Well, as is true for any type of treatment, it is very easy and can be very helpful to start by using over-the-counter eye drops, as I just mentioned. And if your vision change or symptoms are accompanied by pain, obviously alert your oncologist immediately. And ophthalmologists, they should be told just when you were treated last, what type of treatment you had, because oftentimes you're going to be the first ones to tell the ophthalmologist to introduce yourself about your cancer, and that might impact how your ophthalmologist evaluate you. Even afterwards, yes, ophthalmologists and oncologists can discuss things, but really you have to be the proactive person in getting the eye care that you need. Carolyn, I don't know how we're doing on time.
Excellent.
Okay. Should we move on to Dr. Barr, or I don't know if you want me to.
Did you want to add anything
here
further?
Oh, sure. So I always say this, everyone, is that when in doubt, you know, you be the advocate for yourself. When in doubt, check it out. You have to get your eye examined. It may be very, very treatable, such as dryness of your eyes or cataracts changing, which are the two of the most sort of symptoms that all cancer patients may experience. And when patients are given chemo, in particular chemo that has some steroids in the cocktail, cataracts may change and make you need to have very different types of glasses needs. So those things are something that can help you. Those are things that can make your vision and quality of life better immediately. But because some of the same symptoms can represent more sort of ominous diagnoses of eye problems, such as bad infections or things that need more sort of evaluation with the oncologist, it is better to have it checked out earlier than later. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Kim. That was really excellent and really very comprehensive. And I know there'll be questions for you and also for Dr. Fleischman during the Q&A as well. So thank you both. And our next speaker is Dr. Brian Maher. Dr. Maher is ophthalmic oncology with the Ophthalmic Oncology Service, Department of Surgery, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. And Dr. Maher is going to address the key role of your eye care provider, sharing information about your cancer and its treatment with your eye care practitioner, an ophthalmology checkup and follow-up eye care plan before and after treatment. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to Dr. Maher.
Thank you, Dr. Messer. I'm Brian Maher from Memorial Sloan Kettering, and I've been charged to talk to you about the role of your eye care provider during your cancer treatment. And so one thing I want to mention is that people that have cancer can have normal problems too. And so normal eye care shouldn't be left out or forgotten. And sometimes you may attribute one of your signs or symptoms to cancer when it's just a normal process that happens in the eyes. And so it's important to actually touch base with your eye care provider if you can prior to proceeding in any other treatments or as a routine follow-up that you normally do. So the reason why this is important is because there are certain conditions that happen during your treatment that can cause changes in your vision. One that was already mentioned by Dr. Kim and Dr. Fleischer was the use of steroids. Now, steroids can cause cataracts, but they can also cause temporary shifts in your refraction, meaning it changes your vision prescription. And some people may attribute that to a more ominous problem. And if you knew that your glasses prescription was one power and then you checked it again and it was a different power and you were on the steroids, they can contribute that change in vision related to your steroids to that and not to a cataract or something more concerning. And to have kind of a baseline examination before entering into your treatments is always helpful, because during your treatments different things happen and you really want to have kind of a baseline examination to compare to if possible. And during cancer itself, different things can happen to the eyes themselves. You can get lesions within the eye that can cause changes in your vision. And sometimes they can be treated by your treatment. Sometimes they can progress on your treatment. And if you don't have a baseline photograph or a kind of a, something to compare to, then it's harder for the physicians and your oncologists to say whether this disease is active, whether it's progressive, or whether it's stable. So I want to stress that it is kind of important to try to get a baseline examination either earlier on in your treatment or at the beginning if you have the luxury to do so. If not, then it's important to keep routine checks as you would if you didn't have cancer to maintain the health of your eyes and monitor for anything before they're symptomatic. The other big thing about including your eye care doctor in your care is sharing medications with them. And as Dr. Kim mentioned, it's good to be proactive because a lot of doctors in the primary care field in the eye profession aren't familiar with all the new cancer drugs and all the things that are happening in the cancer world. And it's a job, one of your jobs as a patient to breach the ice with them and say, yes, you know, I've been diagnosed with this and I'm currently starting treatments. And then if you have the information, share the drug information with those doctors. And though they may not be familiar with all the drugs, they can look them up and see if any of your symptoms or any potential symptoms exist. But without that information, they're not going to suspect that you may be at more risk to have other problems with your eyes that they don't know about. So in general, the eye care physician should be utilized as a baseline examination. You should share your information with them, especially the medication lists, and you should have a kind of a routine schedule with them. And after reviewing, you know, the history and medications with them, ask them, is there anything I should look out for? Is there any severe problems that I should not blow off or take lightly And we've already mentioned a few: change in visual field, flashes, floaters, those kind of symptoms that need more attention quicker, and they would be able to guide you through those warning signs and give you an idea of which ones are more important than others. And I think that a lot of times these specialists in ophthalmology get left behind because of the serious nature of the original cancer diagnosis, that we end up playing catch-up with a lot of the diseases where we could have been more proactive and increased the quality of life of everyone if we knew a little bit beforehand what was going on and try to be more proactive to it. So in summary, include your eye doctor in part of your care. Help them get a head start on what you're going through, and keep them involved in any changes so they can monitor you and work as a part of your team.
Oh, thank you very much, Dr. Maher. That was really excellent and very good advice to everybody in terms of keeping that in mind as you're undergoing treatment or either before or after treatment as well. So thank you. And our next speaker is Dr. Miguel Maturin. And Dr. Maturin is Associate Professor of Medicine, Medical Oncology, and of Ophthalmology and Visual Science, Yale School of Medicine, Director of Ophthalmic Oncology Section, Department of Ophthalmology and Visual Science, Smilow Cancer Hospital, Yale, New Haven. And Dr. Maturin is going to address the role of the multidisciplinary team, the oncologist, the ophthalmologist, and low vision rehabilitation therapist, clinical trials, how research contributes to your eye vision care, and communicating with your healthcare team. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to Dr. Maturin.
Thank you, Dr. Metzner. Thank you for this opportunity to share a lot of information that's going on in the field of cancer and ophthalmic oncology that might be new for many, many people. And as you mentioned, my role today is to share with you what's the role of the multidisciplinary team, oncologists, ophthalmologists, and low vision rehabilitation therapies. And then clinical trials, how research contributes to your eye vision care and communicating with your healthcare team. If I need to summarize all these topics in one word, I will say communication. Communication is essential for patients' care today, mainly in cancer, because it's not only about the medical oncologist. It's not about the surgeon who's treating the tumor. It's not about radiation oncology. It's also, as you can see today, ophthalmologists, genetic people, genetic counseling, and multiple other specialties that they must work together. If I have a minute to share with you personal history with a very close relative, it is very frustrating and concerning for the patient and the family when the person who is with us, who is with them, does not know all the information, or they ask questions that they supposed to know. I do understand that sometimes we ask questions to know how much the patient knows, but when the person who is assisting the patient does not know all the details, that can create anxiety to the patient and the family. We live in the world that we can take, if there is an eye issue or something, we can take a picture with an iPhone and show it to the provider just to see how big communication has been in the world today. So there is no doubt that everyone should know about what's going with that patient. Now, in our experience, there are some concerns that patients have when they come to see the ophthalmologist of the ophthalmic oncologist. Number one is the cancer itself. And then many patients are surprised because, I'm having eye problems. Does that mean that I have cancer and I'm going to get blind because of this, or because of the treatment, because of the tumor, because of metastatic disease? So the anxiety and the concern start to grow in that matter. We know that cancer is considered today a systemic condition. And the eyes can be, as was mentioned by my colleagues before, that can be affected by different ways, by the cancer itself, by it's either a primary tumor from the eye or metastatic tumor coming from somewhere else in the body, or by the treatment, the classic chemotherapy, the radiation, and the new drugs. If I need to say something to the patients today who are and the relatives who are listening to this conversation, is that number one, do not panic. Many of these conditions or side effects from the drugs are reversible. I've seen personal patients who they were having visual field defects and they were getting blind to them, and you know, just by stopping the drugs, they got better. And again, we go back to the communication. Patients were seeing, we communicate with a medical oncologist, we explain what the side effects are, and that includes some patients from involving clinical trials. Many of these clinical trials, they will stop the medicine or temporary until the side effects from these drugs, in this case, and decrease of the visual field, get better. The same with, we mentioned retinal detachment, inflammation of the eye. There are some side effects from the medicines that can cause eye problems, and again, communicating with the other providers, you know, that can be treated or that can be handled by us with the other team. Now, one of the reasons that I said don't panic, and again, this is regarding communication, is that sometimes a cancer can be a predisposition within the family, and that's when many times the patients need a genetic counseling. And this is to know, you know, okay, well, there is a member of the family with a cancer, and you know, you would like to know what the risk of the relatives to have the same type of cancer or another type of cancer, etc. So that in this world, in the medicine, it's in 2015, genetics and genetic counseling takes a big role. So I don't know how much time I have to complete this conversation, but I would like to summarize that, yes, eyes can be affected in several ways. Number two, the team, and I'm including everyone, including the nurses, including the people who are receiving, they should know what brings the patient to the consultation today. You know, the nurses don't need to know all the side effects from the medicines, but there is, as I said again and again and again, communication with the eye doctor, with the ophthalmic ophthalmic oncologist, with the medical oncologist, radiation people, et cetera, to know about what's going on with the patient. The companies, when they are in clinical trials, many times, and I may say most of the time, they consult us before the treatment, during the treatment, and after the treatment because of the risk of some drugs to create a side effect. And as I said before, many of these conditions are reversible. I don't know if that will be enough, I think, for now.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Matterin. That was really excellent and very informative. These are very informative call, I think, for everybody. We're getting some online questions. People are really following this very closely, so thank you so much. And our next speaker is Sarah Kelly. Ms. Kelly is our older adult program coordinator at Cancer Care. And Ms. Kelly is going to address Cancer Care's free psychosocial services and programs and the role of support groups. It's my pleasure now to turn the program over to Ms. Kelly.
Thank you, Dr. Messner. And I'd like to thank everyone on the call today. I think we've got a lot of really good information. So as Dr. Messner said, I'm an oncology social worker here at Cancer Care, and I work with many people and their loved ones who are managing eye and vision changes as they're going through their treatments. And, you know, we've been talking today about managing your care, managing your quality of life, and I'd like to speak about how creating a support network can really be a part of that care and how Cancer Care can be a part of your network. So a little about Cancer Care. We are a national nonprofit organization. We provide free professional support services to anyone affected by cancer. Our programs include individual counseling. We do that face-to-face in the New York area and then also over the phone nationally. We have support groups that we provide face-to-face in New York and then over the phone nationally and actually online nationally and internationally. We have education programs like the one we're on today. We can provide practical help, assistance navigating the healthcare system. We also have some limited financial assistance as well as chemotherapy copay assistance. All of our services are provided by licensed master's level oncology social workers. And as I said earlier, are completely free of charge. And oncology social workers really are trained in how a diagnosis of cancer affects a person and his or her support network, family and friends. We're also trained to help cancer patients and their supports tackle the problems that accompany the disease, financial demands, physical changes, social adjustment, psychological impact, and really overall care. And I find that adjusting to and finding ways of coping with the diagnosis is an important part of the healing process. I actually consider it to be an important part of treatment. As you know, cancer affects the whole person and the entire support network. Asking for help by joining a support group or by contacting a social worker for counseling is a sign of strength. And what I'd really like for you to take home with you in this is that you don't have to do this by yourself. You don't have to walk the path alone. In joining a support group, you're connecting with others who are going through a similar situation or who maybe are experiencing similar problems. Individual counseling really gives you a space that's just yours to voice any concerns that are coming up and navigate any of the issues I mentioned earlier. And I find the connections really help lessen the isolation that many people with cancer experience. Feeling well emotionally helps you better deal with the diagnosis and the treatment. At this time, if you are interested in any of our services, I recommend you contact us. Yeah, our number and our website should be there. You should have that information. I'm going to give it to you now. You can reach us on our Hope line at 1-800-813-HOPE, or that's 1-800-813-4673. You can also visit our website. We have a very comprehensive website that not only has a listing of all of our services, but also has all of our publications on it, and that's www.cancercare.org. You know, we've learned a lot from today's program. I know there's a lot of information to digest, a lot of information to get your arms around. We're here to help you understand what it means for you and for your loved ones. Your social worker can help you sort of navigate or answer some of the questions from the call today. And really, you know, remember that you are not alone. You know, we're here to help you. Thanks so much for your attention and the opportunity to talk today.
Oh, thanks so much, Sarah. That was excellent. And now we have time for questions. I want to thank all of our speakers because we have lots of time for questions. And I'm going to ask Stephanie to bring all of our speakers on board for the question and answer period. I'm going to ask Stephanie to tell you how to queue up and ask questions. I'm going to try to take as many of your questions as possible. And if for some reason we don't get to your question, then you'll please call us at the end of the call at 1-800-813-HOPE. And I'll repeat that number again at the end of the call. So, but let's see how many of your questions we can take right now. So, Stephanie?
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star then one on your touchtone telephone. If your question has been answered and you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. Those of you on the web may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question. Our first question comes from Mr. Emil S. Your line is open.
Hi. It's a three-parter. One, do floaters eventually go away? Two, eye drops, either gel or liquid, which one is better? And three, my night vision has changed since I've had cancer. Is there anything, and I've gone for checkups, my eyes are okay, I have glasses, but my night vision is not as good as my day vision anymore. What do I do?
Okay, well, Emil, good to have you on the call. So three questions. So let's see, I'm going to ask Dr. Kim if you would address as many of these as you wish, and then I'll pass them on to others. How's that?
Sure. Okay. So thank you. So floaters, if the floaters are due to what we call the vitreous of the cavity of your eye, the gel that collapses onto itself, causing the view of floaters in and out of your view. Some people say that they kind of don't notice it anymore, and therefore, I mean, one can say that it goes away, but some people still are able to experience it, especially against the blue of the sky or white of the wall. There are certain environmental sort of lighting that may actually allow you to experience it more. But floaters, again, unless it is accompanied by other symptoms such as flashing lights or showers of dark little spots or a change of vision, obviously, and you're a cancer survivor, have to get your eyes dilated and have it examined. But after it's reassured that you don't have any other problems in the retina, it probably is just something that one has to live with. With regard to the gel versus liquid, it really depends on what you like best, what works for you the best. So I always tell my patients, you know, it actually doesn't matter what brand you choose. There are several brands out there, and for some patients, one brand works better than the other, and it's unclear why that is, but it's really preference. When patients have more dryness than some others, then thicker version of the gel or even ointment at nighttime may be better. Obviously, using those type of thicker products during the day will blur your vision, but it does coat your eyes better. And lastly, for the night vision, you know, night vision changes can be as a result of something as simple as your cataracts slowly getting worse so that you just don't feel completely happy in dim light situations. And if you already had cataract surgery and you feel that your night vision is continuing to get worse, it actually is something that should be evaluated. Your retina, the eyes, can actually look completely normal, but the vision signal that is attached from your eye to your brain, there may be some issues there. So even if your eye exam may be completely normal, if your symptoms are getting worse for you, you might need to see a retina specialist or a neuro-ophthalmologist and get a very specific diagnostic test called ERG. But again, that may or may not be an issue. It may simply be due to your cataracts.
Excellent. Thank you. And we have another question from one of our online participants. For Dr. Marr, is there a worry about glaucoma becoming worse or other pressure changes in the orbit due to treatments? Could you address that in a general way, Dr. Marr?
Sure. There are certain medications that you can be on during your cancer treatment that can affect the intraocular pressure. In general, and there's other environmental things that can do it too, including radiation. Depending if you get radiation to the head and neck area, that can also cause some changes to happen in the eye as well. In general, though, as long as the medications that you're taking don't have a known cause to increase or decrease intraocular pressure, the normal course of glaucoma shouldn't be altered. So in general, it shouldn't affect it, but there are multiple different possibilities where it can, and it really comes down to the specifics of your medication and your other cancer treatments. So it's a good idea, if you do have glaucoma, to specifically ask your oncologist, will any of these drugs influence or have known to have influence on glaucoma? And again, as I mentioned before, you should share this information with your glaucoma doctor too if you're followed by somebody with that. But in general, just having cancer isn't a known risk factor for progression of glaucoma.
Thank you. Excellent. And another question for Dr. Matter, actually, from Joanne. Does a basal cell cancer on the underside of the eyelid tend to metastasize to other parts of the eye or encourage the creation of a melanoma of the eye?
No, basal cell carcinoma of the skin, unless there is a local invasion, I am not aware of long-distance metastasis. So that's point number one. Now, if I understand exactly that, the second part of the question related to melanoma.
Yes, the second part of the question or encourage the creation of a melanoma of the eye. So does a basal cell cancer of the underside of the eyelid tend to metastasize to other parts of the eye or encourage the creation of a melanoma of the eye?
No, that I know of. But, you know, I can imagine if a person had a basal cell carcinoma and is concerned about melanoma, you know, I'm sure that it's a white, fair skin, maybe even blonde or red hair person. that's when we include, well, okay, well, be careful with the sun exposure, and you know, see your dermatologist, etc. Not that I know of increasing the risk for melanoma because of the basal cell. Now.
Excellent, thank you. And of course, when all of this, we do encourage you, of course, to go back to your own treating healthcare team, your own expert ophthalmologist. And there is a question from one of our online participants about. So this question from Robert: how do we know if an ophthalmologist has knowledge of the eye problems of cancer patients? Is there a directory or specialty society that we can contact? So I'm going to ask Dr. Fleischman first because I know you work with this a lot, and I'm going to ask perhaps Dr. Mara to also address this as well. But in terms of just when you obviously often may see something and want to refer someone, how is that often done in a comprehensive center?
Well, for those of us that work in larger centers, we're blessed with having lots of colleagues around. And we get to know which of our colleagues seems to be the most knowledgeable. And I think that's, in the centers I've seen across the country, that's how most referrals are made. It may not be the best way, and I'm interested in my colleagues' responses too.
Dr. Mara, do you want to?
Sure.
Thank you.
So repeat the question one more time so I can be specific about it.
Yes. So how do we know if an ophthalmologist has knowledge of the eye problems of cancer patients? Is there a directory or a specialty society that we can contact?
So with regards to the society, you know, there's an international ophthalmic oncology service that has people deal with specifically eye cancer. Now that's different than a regular eye care provider in the area that you are, that is familiar with some of the side effects, comorbidities, and different events that can happen in the eye. And I think that there's a lot of good local people out there, and I think it's a little bit of a burden on the patient to find the right person by knowing what to look for. So I say that because if you have a retinal problem, you don't want to see your general ophthalmologist about a retinal toxicity of your medication. Now, if you get to that specialist, then there are good people in, you know, general people that don't specialize in cancer that do a good job at recognizing those and treating that. But you have to kind of be in the right ballpark, so to speak. So if you have you know, a dry eye symptom, you don't want to go to the retina doctor. And so I think a primary care person who is good to identify which subspecialist within ophthalmology that you need is a good start. And I think that there's no kind of criteria on cancer among ophthalmologists, but the ability to recognize where your problem is, what subspecialist, whether you need an ocular oncologist or whether you need a retina specialist or an anterior segment specialist, is a good way to start. And if you approach that problem from that manner, you'll probably be able to find a person with a knowledge. But as you know, everyone doesn't have the same set of skills, or especially with regards to cancer amongst them. But to be able to freely refer amongst our colleagues to find out where you need to go is really important.
Can I make a comment?
Yes, please. Yes, thank you.
I completely agree with what was just said, and I would like to add two other ways to know about, you know, if doctor, your physician knows about the topic. Number one, ask the doctor. Don't be afraid to ask the doctor about how comfortable he or she feels about treating your condition. Number two, we go back to the communication part. There is an internet, and with the internet, as Dr. Marr mentioned, you know, you have the societies where you can check, and you know, all it's very simple to find any person today just by Google that person, or to look for a person and to know what the person has been working on. But I think that please don't feel afraid to ask.
Excellent. And is there like an ophthalmology society that people could be aware of that has a component of referral? Just I'm thinking of people who many, as I think Dr. Fleischman said, of course, the large comprehensive cancer centers or the academic centers, but for people who may be, some of our callers are from different parts of the country where they may be far away from those centers and maybe working with someone in their community, how does, any thoughts about that as well?
I think, you can go on to the American Academy of Ophthalmology website and you can search through specialties. And there may be a way to actually look up anyone who has ocular oncology subspecialty. But again, as I said, perhaps you don't need that degree of specialization. And so it's a little bit more challenging. I'd turn it out to everybody else to make a comment on that.
Dr. Marr mentioned the American Society of Ophthalmology. For the people that are listening from other countries, Korea, Europe, etc.,
right.
Many of the doctors from those countries, they in South America, Africa, Asia, they belong, they are members of the American Society of Ophthalmology too. So I think that, with information we are providing, and it depends on what the problem is. No, it's not the same having floaters, flashes, dry eye, than being concerned about an eye tumor. So depending on what the problem, what the topic is, it's going to be simpler or more complicated to find the right physician for you.
Excellent. Thank you. This is really a wonderful conversation. Thank you. This is excellent. These are excellent questions. And our next question, Stephanie?
Our next question comes from Gina J. Your line is open.
Hi. Thank you. I completed 5 years of tamoxifen, and it is recommended that by my oncologist to do another 5. One of my concerns about tamoxifen is its effects on the retina and making you either causing or making you more prone to cataracts. I did tolerate the first 5 wonderfully, but I am concerned about cumulative toxicity, and I was just wondering if there have been any studies on increased, risk to the eye with 10 years versus 5. So currently I'm taking a little sabbatical to, weigh my options and think about it. It is a real big concern of mine. And as an aside, I ran into somebody who's just a couple of years older than me, was diagnosed maybe a year before me, and she's on her 7th year. Keep in mind, I'm early 40s. And these may be factors that I want to mention, premenopausal and her as well. And she's on her 7th year. She didn't hesitate. She went, right for the 10, whereas I'm, vacillating. She is noticing changes in her vision. She was asking me, and, we're having a conversation, like, what we're experiencing, this and that. And she happened to bring that out without any prompting from me about that. So definitely a concern of mine.
Thank you. Okay, well, thank you for that question. Dr. Fleischman, do you want to start with that, and then we can have others address it as well, just that kind of general question about tamoxifen and its
sure.
impact?
It's a tough call because I'm familiar with the pattern where tamoxifen is associated with cataracts. I believe most people in cancer are. The question is, during that 10 years, you're also getting older, and there are certain expected changes to the eye during that time, so it's hard for me to separate how much of it would be the tamoxifen, how much of it is just the aging process, although you do mention that you're somewhat younger. And again, your own oncologist would have to really weigh the risks of how important the tamoxifen is to you. As far as your family history, the history of people in your family who've had cancer, their estrogen receptor status, and weigh the decision along those lines. I'm not sure there's a general answer to this. This is one of those very specific things.
So it's an excellent question, and we certainly recommend that you really have a really in-depth discussion with your treating oncologist in terms of your concerns, as well as with your ophthalmologist. I don't know if any of the ophthalmologists want to comment as well, just in terms of having been asked those questions perhaps by people who are struggling with these questions as well.
I'll just say one thing in that. I think what Dr. Potchman mentioned is critical in that you have to, one has to weigh the individual risk of why it was recommended to, for you to have five additional years. Is it something about your family history, your histology type, what pattern you started, and how old you are? And all of those things weighed against the possibility of having developing retinal problems. Now, one thing that can be done is you have very close follow-up so that the very hint of early changes, the ophthalmologist as well as your oncologist can have a discussion about what it means to have the change that you have. Cataracts, quite frankly, can be taken care of. So that's not something that should really, while it is going to change your vision, it's going to impact sort of how often you have to change your glasses and whatnot, that is something that can be taken care of. So permanent problems with retina, that's more of a serious issue, but again, weighed against your own personal risk, it needs to be, as Dr. Miguel mentioned in the past, the multidisciplinary approach to your personalized risk versus benefit.
Excellent, thank you.
Just one addition to all of that is that it kind of reinforces trying to get a baseline examination. And if you have, if you're thinking about going on the second wave of treatment, it's important that you have regular checkups, that you have kind of a baseline examination. As Dr. Kim said, cataracts are reversible, so you know that's one hurdle to get over, but it isn't a permanent problem. The more serious effects on retina and things like that should be monitored closely, and having a kind of a regular schedule for that is important as well.
Yeah, that's such an important point. Thank you for making that, Dr. Marr, that actually before you, if you can, before you start treatment, everything, that you have a baseline eye exam, because then everything can be, you know, and if you haven't done that, you can do it now and then compare things, you know, going forward. It's helpful to know really how you go into this with your eyes and your eye care and stuff like that. That's really important. And we actually talk about that with other kinds of health issues as well, but we haven't ever introduced that with eye care, and it's really important to have your, if you can, some of you are already in treatment, but it's never too late to have an eye check and use that as a baseline and to have your doctors work closely together. Now, we have a question about from Leslie. What about eyelashes? I tell patients they will regrow. I get questions about vitamin A or E applied to the lash line. Is there anything you suggest, or just give it time? Dr. Kim, do you want to address this question?
No, I think, unfortunately, it is a tincture of time that will address that problem, especially for women. I think it is something that is very bothersome. But more importantly, what losing eyelashes sort of suggests is that your eyes themselves are also not comfortable, because the hair follicles and the oil glands of your eyelid that participate in the health of your eye surface is also impacted. Regarding sort of the cosmesis part, you know, there have been some studies of having commercially available medications that are thought to help to grow your lashes, but it really hasn't bore out in terms of its efficacy in cancer patients, because all the hair follicles kind of sort of, just like any dividing cells, including your cancer, obviously, are impacted. So I would say tincture of time is probably on your side.
And yes.
If I can add something, well, also depends on what's the reason for the eyelashes loss. If the patient was receiving chemotherapy or systemic medication, I completely agree. Now, there are some patients who receive some kind of radiation, and mainly with patients who have tumors in the eye, and when those patients receive radiation and they have eyelashes loss, that could be permanent.
Oh, I agree. Absolutely. A good point, sir.
Well, thank you for mentioning that. So that's important to, when you, if you are having radiation, that is a good question to ask in terms of the eye area. Is that correct, Dr. Matterin? Is that head and neck? Okay, excellent. So now another question from one of our online participants, Celine. Is it common to experience twitching of eyelids as a side effect of treatment? Dr. Moore, could you address that?
Sure. So the eyelid twitching, if we call it myokymia, where you just get a small little kind of vibration of the muscles around the eyelid, that can happen in normal people for multiple different reasons, from lack of sleep, electrolyte imbalances, dehydration, different medications or even caffeine can affect those kind of things. Because the cancer population will have probably a higher shift in different fluids and electrolytes and things like that, perhaps it's in a may happen in a higher instance, but to my knowledge, it hasn't been reported at being at a higher risk.
Excellent, thank you.
I'd like to add to that.
Yes, please.
Very rarely, but it does happen, that some of the older nausea medicines can actually cause a variety of twitching, and including the eye. So if it's a question of taking some of the older nausea medicines, your oncologist and the ophthalmologist need to take that into account.
That's a good point.
Thank you. Well, this is a wonderful team, I have to say. This is, and for all of you, you can see the multidisciplinary team right in action right here. That's really how it really the ideal for each of you in terms of your care. We had a question also. Does chemotherapy contribute to developing macular degeneration? Dr. Matterin, do you want to address that?
Well, I'm not sure. I think we're talking about two different conditions. Cancer treatment in general can cause different things to the eye. Radiation to the brain can cause some radiation retinopathy without being macular degeneration. To my knowledge, and I might be wrong, I don't think there is any relationship between the macular degeneration and the cancer treatment.
Any other comments? Or
I would agree with Dr. Matterin. You know, the age-related macular degeneration that we see is not accelerated, to our knowledge, by having cancer. Now, there are a lot of toxicities and medications that we use that can cause degenerative macular conditions, but they are not the same as the true, what everybody's familiar with, age-related macular degeneration.
Now, they can be treated the same way than macular degeneration, but they're not the same condition to our knowledge.
Excellent. Thank you. And we have one. Yes?
Add one thing about that.
Please, yes.
Chemotherapies come from a variety of different chemical families, so it's hard to say that chemotherapy in general causes something. You have to be very specific about which chemotherapies, because some of them are very different than some of the others.
Well, that's a very good point. It is the issue of communicate. I think Dr. Matterin and Dr. Maurer, everyone has mentioned Dr. Fleischman, Dr. Kim. We've all talked about the issue, Sarah Kelly, the issue of communication, that we really want you to go take this information, go back to your treating healthcare team. So you're getting some general information at this call today, but again, how does it apply to you? So if you have any questions about this, please always err on the side of going back to your treating healthcare team with this information and then really discuss it with them, particularly if it's of concern to you. Then we have one last question. I was prescribed Restasis prior to starting chemotherapy. Should I continue using this while I am undergoing treatment, even if I am currently experiencing excessive tearing, watery eyes? Dr. Kim, could you address this?
Yes, well, if there are those who start topical cyclosporine, especially if you're undergoing allogeneic transplantation, I think it really depends on what your eye surface problems are for which the ophthalmologist has given that to you. As I mentioned, patients who experience teary eyes and sort of quote-unquote too much tears, that can be as a result of dryness as the bottom line problem. Having said that, depending on what type of chemotherapy you're receiving, some of the chemotherapy can actually also, because it can sort of dry out everything, your skin, your lacrimal gland, your salivary gland, so you experience dry eyes, dry mouth, theoretically, it couldn't hurt you, okay, theoretically, but will using preservative-free artificial tears also deliver the same benefit? I guess it depends on how what level of dryness you may have on your eye surface. So before deciding to come off the topical medication on your own, it might be a good idea to have a reevaluation to sort of get a sense of why you are experiencing the symptoms that you're experiencing. I just also want to make one general comment, and that is ophthalmologist as a subspecialty is a relatively unique subspecialty where all of medicine, all your doctors speak a very different language than we do. So ophthalmology remains a relatively a black box to oncologists, your pulmonologist, cardiologist, and blurred vision is very difficult for your doctors to ascertain how serious of a problem you may be experiencing with just a simple symptom of blurred vision. So I would simply highlight that you be your own advocate and get yourself checked out if it's concerning to you.
Excellent. That is an excellent, summation of the call, that you really want you to be your best advocate. If something's bothering you, a symptom, you really want to go to your healthcare, to your healthcare provider and your ophthalmologist and check this out. It's very important. And particularly your ophthalmologist if you're having eye symptoms. And I want to thank all of our speakers today. They've been outstanding. And I want to thank all of you who've queued up and asked such terrific questions. I do want to remind you that this is a one-hour program, and indeed that we recognize that 1 hour can address a workshop, it's true, but that you may have many other questions that you think of after the program. So I want to be sure that that no one leaves this call feeling alone, but you are now part of the cancer care community, and we want you to call us with any questions or concerns you may have or a question you didn't get to ask during the call or have thinking about after the call. And our 800 number is 1-800-813-HOPE. And for our international participants, certainly to visit our website at www.cancercare.org or info@cancercare.org. Most importantly, we hope that you've learned something from today's call and that you've learned something that you can take back to your healthcare team so they can tailor the information you received to what would best help you. And particularly that you all have a call out now and recognize the importance of your ophthalmology team in helping you with any eye symptoms you may have. Again, I want to thank you all for your participation today on the call, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop. You may now disconnect, and everyone, have a wonderful day.